So this is another interview for the Coral Way Project. It's March 15th, 2008, and it's about quarter to four in quarter to
three
in the afternoon. And we're at the in one of the interview rooms at the Southern Florida Historical Society. And so why don't you go ahead and say your name into the microphone.
Gladys Margarita Diaz.
Juana Gladys Diaz.
Okay, that's great. And you won't have to lean because the microphones are really good. Okay. My name is Richard Ruiz. I'm at the University of Arizona. And also in the room is Beth DeFarber, who is also at the University of Arizona and also a Coral Way graduate. Okay, so maybe you can tell me when you were at Coral Way and as a student, right?
I got there in November of 1962, mm-hmm. and I was there through 1964. Then I moved to Hialeah, and I was out of Coral Way at M.A. Milam Elementary for 2 years, and then I came back for fifth and sixth grade at Coral Way, which would put me there 66, 67, 68.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were talking to me before off the recording about your own family background. You came here from Cuba.
In March of 1962, we arrived in Miami. We were relocated by the church, mm-hmm. the Catholic Church. We were adopted by a family and a church out in Mountain View, California. And we moved there. We were given a house and an automobile. And my father, who was an electrical engineer in Cuba, was interviewed for a position at Pacific Gas and Electric. At that time, the Cuban Missile Crisis was in progress, and he was told that he was a potential security risk, so that he wound up working in a box factory. I was put in summer school to learn English at Monte Loma Elementary, and that's where I learned English. I learned how to speak that summer. My next-door neighbors were 8 children. We lived in a very family neighborhood, and I used to play with the neighborhood kids, and eventually I picked up English, you know, just playing around and mm-hmm. so on. Mm-hmm. And so then in November of that year, earlier that year, my aunt and my grandparents came from Cuba in August of 62. So like in November, right after the Cuban Missile Crisis, we decided to join them here in Miami. And my father's phrase was, if we're going to be poor, we might as well be poor together. Mm-hmm. So we moved back here, and we lived on 13th Avenue and 13th Street, about 5 blocks from Coral Way Elementary. And my father took me to register me. And when I got interviewed, I was put with the English native speaker group. And my cousin, who had arrived from Cuba in August, was put with the Spanish-speaking group. So that was like a major crisis for us because we were like, you know, very close, almost like brother and sister. And so my homeroom teacher was Miss Borden. And that was around the time that the whole space program was starting to become really popular. And so we had to write essays about things. And one of my essays was about Gordon Cooper and his orbits mm-hmm. around the Earth, which I thought were really cool. And I designed an outfit for a woman astronaut, and my teacher thought that that was really cool. And so she notified the newspaper, and the newspaper wrote an article about me, basically because they were amazed that a Cuban kid could spell orbit and capsule, and that we were actually interested at such a young age in the space program. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was kind of my first adventure with, you know, notoriety. And we stayed there, first grade, second grade, and then we moved out. And I remember my teachers were Mrs. Benitez.
Did you bring the paper from the news?
Yeah, it's right here.
No, no, the other one, the one that wrote the
Mm-hmm. And so then, yeah, see, I brought it. It's here. The translation, yes, uh-huh. yeah. And so we had half the day. The way it worked was that we would have half the day in English and half the day in Spanish. And the issue was that the English-speaking kids would, you know, you would speak only in Spanish. So I would learn math in Spanish or math in English. I would learn geography in English or geography in Spanish. So you learn the words for the different continents and the different cities in both languages. And the non-Hispanic kids, the Anglo kids, became extremely fluent in Spanish and very aplatanados, as you would say, which is banana stained, which means that they really, you know, kind of were very easy with the culture and so on. We had art class, we had music class. In music class, we learned Spanish songs. And so my aunt, who's here, was a music teacher.
Yes.
And how many times a day did you?
Well, there was a the administration had this idea. They put the one half of the day for English and half a day for Spanish. Then the English teacher and Spanish teacher work a session of 3 hours. And then we switch. The Spanish teacher and the English teacher switch the kids. And for example, the kids that were learning with the Spanish teacher went to the English teacher. And the kids that were in the English class were transferred for the Spanish class.
And
that
was and
the system, but between that, was an hour daily for the teachers to meet and plan together. The American teacher and the Spanish teacher, they used to plan together, and they needed an hour to write the objectives and things like that, and then. They had one hour, that hour that the teachers needed for half an hour for physical education and half an hour for music or art. And when I started, I didn't have my teacher certificate to teach in a regular classroom. So the principal gave me work as a substitute teacher, as a Q&A. No, it's a category of a regular teacher, it was a Q&A. And I started to teach music in Spanish, and so in the Spanish classes, and in music in English, you know, so that they, because it was a bicultural program, is, and it's very successful, still is.
What years were you there?
I started in 67, 68, and 70. I was working there as a Q&A because at the same time I had to study at the University of Miami the credits I needed to become a regular teacher. And then, it's something that is related to Coraway Elementary, but it's not really Coraway Elementary. It was a special program that the Board of Education created with the federal government, and that was a special program to write a bilingual curriculum. In Spanish and English, and they put their offices in Miami, and they were seeking for teachers speaking English and Spanish at the same level, more or less. No, with the heavy accent I have, but you know. And then they picked me from the Board of Education and other teachers, Cuban teachers and American teachers. To write those activities.
They were workbooks.
And then we wrote the activities, and they were books for first grade, second grade, third, 56th grade. And I was in the strength of writing activities in Spanish for English students for a while. And then they switched, and I had to write English activities for the Spanish kids.
And this was
and
held at the University of Miami?
And it was very related to Southside Elementary, because those materials were given to Southside Elementary to use with the kids.
Which is another bilingual school.
Okay, but then the program was very good. It was very well implemented, but I don't know.
To answer your question, you asked if this was through the University of Miami. It was not. It was Dade County Public Schools got a federal grant. It was administered. The head of the project was a guy called Ralph Robinette, R-O-B-I-N-E-T-T.
Yes.
And he was her boss. And he recruited a number of teachers to write these workbooks. And this was executed in the Dade County Public Schools building. And she worked on that for many years, I remember.
No, many years, because I had to leave it the way my husband got sick.
My
husband had a stroke on me. And it was really, really sick, you know. And then I tried to work close to my home, to be close to him. And then I left the program and asked for a regular class in another bilingual school that is Southside Elementary.
So those people are probably around who worked on those workbooks and so on.
The workbooks were the ones that eventually became those Miami linguistic readers that we were talking about, that we had been talking about with Sanchez, I think, right? So yeah, no, this is very important to us, because we have not heard too much about that kind of thing yet. So that's great. When you were when you came to Coral Way, why did they put you in the English group?
Because I spoke perfect English.
And how did they know that? I mean, did they have you come and audition, or did they have you speak to them?
I think they tested us. She knows more.
May I say something? You were very young, but you don't remember that when you were in Cuba, you were taking English in the daycare.
Oh, okay. Basically, what
they care in English.
Okay, in Cuba.
You are posing.
In Cuba, before we came, we had been in like a child care program that gave us vowels and pronunciation in both English and Spanish. So by the time I hit Mountain View, I already had my vowels and my consonant sounds in, so I had the phonics basics. So when I wound up in the first grade, the teacher called my mom and said, you know, your child is a prodigy, you know, she's speaking perfect English. My mom's like, relax, she's normal. She just had all this stuff, you know, way back about a year ago, and she probably remembers the sounds and the combination of sounds. And it wasn't very difficult to make the transition between the consonant sounds in Spanish and how they sounded and the English. So when I arrived at Coral Way, by that time, I had been in Mountain View for about maybe 5 or 6 months, and I'd been practicing English with only English-speaking young people, and I spoke Spanish at home with my parents. So when I got there, I think what they do is they test you. I think they tested us, and I remember that they asked me a bunch of questions and a bunch of, you know, like how do you say this and that, read aloud, that kind of thing, and I was already reading and I was already writing in English. So then they were like, oh, native speaker. And so that was like a big hoo-ha, because, you know, here's a Cuban kid and she's perfectly bilingual and she's only been here like 4 months. Oh my God. But we were lucky in that we had the basic phonics infrastructure of language, which is the basics of language, any language, in Cuba. So we had arrived with those very basic skills. Mm-hmm. So that was that. I'm going to go through your questionnaire.
Go ahead.
Because sure. I want to help you finish this out. The languages that were spoken in our home always and to this date are Spanish, and it never changed. And I remember distinctly that there was like a law in my house that no conversation could occur at the dinner table in English, because my grandmother lived with us and she didn't understand Spanish. So speaking in front of her in English was rude and secretive and not okay. My teachers in the program were in first grade. I had Miss Borden, and who's the woman who called the Miami News for the newspaper article. Miss Hendrick. And she was that was first grade. And then we had Mrs. Benitez in fifth grade. We had Mrs. Sanchez, Josefina Sanchez, who still lives here on Brickell. And I had Inmaculada del Valle in third grade.
She just passed away 2 days ago.
Three or four days ago, she just passed away. Magda LeCour was one of our teachers.
It's very valuable, Magda.
And then we had Miss Sotolongo in sixth grade, and she lives near my house in Coral Gables, so I know she's around. And Miss Mikes, she was my sixth grade teacher. The three teachers were team teachers. We were in the pod, and there were like 90 kids in one room, and there were no windows, which was a nightmare. I'm like, design-wise, that's really bad news. And we had those, so Miss Mikes, Miss Sotolongo, and Miss Sanchez. And my student friends were everybody from Miki Miñagorri, Mercy Palomo, my cousin Frank Montero. Becky Porta was my best friend. And we had like a bunch of other friends, and I can't remember their names. I think if I see the names, I'll remember them.
Were these mainly friends in the English group or the Spanish group?
Or did
you even notice?
I didn't notice, actually. Mm-hmm. Becky and I spoke in English, and we were in fifth grade together. And Mrs. Benitez, I remember distinctly, you know, she was very good with Spanish and literature and language arts. You know, that was like a big deal with her. And I'll talk more about that in a minute when I get down to the program itself. Others who attended the program, I just mentioned a bunch of names. Have you found any of these people, like Miki Miñagorri and those guys?
I think we've found a few of them.
Okay.
We're still looking. We're still looking for some.
If you give me some people that you haven't contacted, maybe I can help you. And I was assigned to the English group, and I already mentioned that just because of the way, you know, I could speak and write and read, mostly my reading skills. And then, you know, that was the test, kind of like, can you read aloud and can you pronounce things correctly? The ratio of Spanish and English was about 50-50 in the classrooms. And as my tía was saying, that the subjects were all exchangeable. In other words, you did all the subjects in both languages, which was really cool, because then what you learned is how to pronounce the names of things in both languages. And you could literally, it's like a dial, you switch. The curriculum materials were always in both languages, and they were published both locally through the Rebonet program, but that was afterwards. But I remember that they were national, you know, books in English and Spanish, and also from Spain and from Latin America. Mm-hmm. In the morning, we would have like the classes were basically, like you would start the day in the class that you were assigned to. So my day was English, and then I would switch to Spanish, and then vice versa. So if you were in the homeroom of Spanish, you did Spanish in the morning, and then you would switch to English. My parents were always very, very involved, first of all, because my mother's a teacher, and she was also part-timing at Coral Way. And she was there during the period that I was there. Tia was in Spain and didn't come till the 65, right?
I had to leave Cuba
later.
Later. And I was living in Spain about a year.
Yeah. So she didn't arrive till about 65, 66, when we had already been at Coral Way for a couple of years. We were the first class. I remember, we're talking fall of 62. The program had just been allowed, and there was this whole supply of Cuban teachers that had just arrived from Cuba that were ready, willing, and able to put it into place. We used to have a lot of fun. We played a lot. I don't remember open houses or information meetings. You know, my parents must have gone to them.
That was in November, always the open house.
The open house was fun. Mr. Logan was the principal. He was really cool. Mrs. Werner was the reigning goddess of great power in the office. And I remember that they were very, you know, they were really nice. Mr. Logan was very, very sweet, very serious. You were scared of him. You're going to go to the principal's office.
He was a gentleman.
A real gentleman. And then everybody kind of knew each other because we all lived near there. And everybody who came from Cuba that were teachers, like my mom and her little gang, she had like a posse of other teachers, and they were all going to school at the University of Miami, and they were all recertifying themselves in the United States, so that everybody, it was like a clump of people. And they interchanged a lot of information, they studied together. And I remember distinctly doing term papers that my mother would write. And I remember I was like in fifth or sixth grade, and I was the grammar person. So you can imagine, 10, 11 years old, I'm the phone person to call the phone company. I'm the one that orders the phone or talks about the bill. My father taught me how to write checks so that I knew how to write a check in English. And he would say, here, you do it because you speak better English than I do. And so the child becomes the translator for everybody, yeah. Which is a pretty adult job. And I remember when my mom had like a term paper due, and she and her friends were working on this big project, and they needed to type it out, and so they hired me as the typist. And so I would basically stay up with her to type up her term papers in English. They would write them, but then if I found, like, you know, grammar issues and stuff or vocabulary things, I would correct them. Which is it's a very interesting flow, like the child correcting the parent, which is kind of funny.
Well, it was very often.
Yeah. So then what was my impression and my participation of the program then? I had a lot of fun. It was a blast. And I thought it was really, really cool to be able to kind of do everything. There was always the way the different families did things a little bit differently. You know, like I wasn't allowed to join Brownies or Girl Scouts. I could not sleep away or go to camp. I was like verboten. And, you know, sleepovers were not an option in Cuban families.
And you are the oldest.
And I'm the oldest female.
Oh, you are so. The oldest. You have.
And I was very happy to participate. And now I'm going to talk about how Coralway helped me in my development as a student and as a person. First of all, it laid in the foundation for like a completely bilingual life. Now, I am married to a nice gringo guy from New Hampshire. I went to school in upstate New York. I went to Cornell University. I got my master's degree. I have a Bachelor of Architecture, which is a 5-year degree, and then I got a master's for 2 more years. That master's degree is the terminal degree in my field, so I am qualified to be a professor. I was visiting faculty for about 3 years, where I would go on campus and I would lecture, and then I would bring the students to Miami. And the reason is that the students on campus at Cornell were kids from the northeastern area, which were maybe not as empowered as a kid from Miami. And if you have one word that this program creates, is empowerment. Empowerment for the Latino kid who's able to confront and realize his language and be fluent in his language and not be ashamed of being Hispanic, as well as being completely fluent in English and being completely dominant in that language and being able to communicate with the rest of the culture. The reverse flow is that my friends who were Anglo that were at Coral Way were completely fluent in the Cuban culture or the Hispanic culture and are able to work in any kind of field here in Miami that it requires bilingualism. I think that being that kind of a person enabled me to be very sure of myself for the rest of my life. I had when I got to Cornell, I lived at the International Living Center. My best friends were from Colombia and Venezuela and Argentina, and my Spanish got really, really good. Because I spoke Spanish at the university with Spanish speakers from other countries, my vocabulary expanded. I learned many, many more ways to say bad things. And then, as a result, I wound up, you know, being much more dexterous in commercial and you know, sort of business Spanish. I wound up then, you know, eventually working in New York. I worked on Wall Street for about 8 years. And there were two things. I got my securities license in 1985, which is a National Association of Securities Dealers Series 7 license. I was probably one of the first Hispanic women that took that exam in the mid-80s. I went to work for a company called Bear Stearns & Company, and Bear Stearns is one of the largest trading firms in the world. They didn't have anyone to cover the Latin America desk, and so I was assigned to the international department for only one reason. I could speak Spanish fluently, and I was an Ivy League graduate, and I had my securities license, those three. If I had not had the basics of Coraway Elementary, my love of language and my love of literature in Spanish, I wouldn't have been able to hit that mark. And I had the privilege, I was assigned to work with Spaniards, and it was fantastic. And I got to travel, and I got to have a lot of fun. And that was, to me...
And she loves to read.
Yeah.
Always reading.
So, in essence, what it does is it makes your life, like, instead of 180, it makes your life 360. 360 degrees of life. It enables you to participate in other people's lives in ways that you otherwise wouldn't be able to. And it enables me to participate with people who are from other countries that otherwise wouldn't have that. And my purpose for creating my program, my summer program for Cornell, was to give the Latino kids that were not from Miami, that were maybe from the West Coast, you know, from California, Arizona, New Mexico, you know, New York, to get them to see, you know, that you could be completely bilingual. You don't have to lose your identity as a Hispanic. But to be completely bilingual in English is to be very, very empowered. And being a bilingual person gives you that opportunity, that special edge in business that a lot of non-bilingual people don't have. And the way that our culture is moving into the global citizen, this hemisphere is completely Hispanic, you know, the bottom half, the southern half and the northern half. So one would think that being a bilingual person is a marketing tool, if nothing else, from an employment perspective. And so that's kind of, you know, my take on the whole thing. I think that answers all the questions basically here as a person. And I think that I got a lot out of all of my teachers. Mrs. Benitez was very adamant about making sure that not only did we understand Cuban culture, but we got social studies in every single Latin American culture. And to really appreciate the history of Ecuador, the history of Colombia, the history of Venezuela, so that it's a pan-Hispanic viewpoint as opposed to just, you know, this sort of, I am Cuban and that's all I am. And so that was kind of cool. Yes, I can read and write in my second language now. And I'm currently working on the web. Most of my buddies are Hispanic. That I attend after school activities whenever I could. In what language do you speak to my friends out of school, both English and Spanish? We talk about boys in Spanish, and we talk about girls. It's funny, like Becky and I used to watch, we were like major Star Trek fans. She was in love with Mr. Spock, and I was in love with James T. Kirk. And we would talk about the episodes and, you know, this and that. And then, but whenever you wanted to make fun of somebody, you'd do that in Spanish. Okay? So basically what I enjoyed most is my ability to tell jokes in both languages, because I think that makes my life much more fun.
And your cousin, too.
Huh?
And your cousin.
And my cousin, too.
He remembers.
Do you remember anything that you didn't like?
I didn't like, let's see, what didn't I like? I used to get put outside when I would talk too much.
It could be what that he
Miss Mikes put me outside in the winter one time. Because I was a blabbermouth. I used to get like A's and then, you know, I cannot stop talking. Able to talk at all times.
You know, I would like to tell you, Frank, about this program.
Sure, you can.
I think he would enjoy it.
Yeah, of course he would.
It's this Frank who?
My cousin Frank. He lives in Pebble Beach now
my
again.
Nephew.
Yeah.
Did you have any?
No, he lives at Princeton University.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I have twin sisters, but they're 5 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed the online survey, so you guys have... The sequence of time is, we were in Little Havana for first through third grade, then we moved to Hialeah for fourth, and then I went back to Little Havana for fifth and sixth grade. In seventh grade, at the end of sixth grade, we moved to Coral Gables, and we bought our first house. And my mother still lives there. And so I went to private school after that.
But none of your brothers and sisters
came. My kids' sisters never got the opportunity to go to Coral Way, because by the time that they were old enough to go to school, we were already, you know, moved in a neighborhood that they wouldn't have been qualified to go to that school. They went to mm-hmm. Coral Gables Elementary.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a pretty comprehensive look at your life. If there's anything else that you can think of, this project is probably going to be going on probably formally for another year, but beyond that, I think we'll always be interested in adding to it and so on. It's going to be a digital. At least the library part is going to be digital, so we can always add to it. And I will always be interested in more information that people have. So if you have any more, if you think of anything, you can get in contact with us. This place is very interested in artifacts of any sort, because unfortunately, in spite of the fact that Coral Way is the most famous bilingual school in the country, because it was the first public school, there is nothing at the museum. There is nothing here on Coral Way. Not one piece. Actually, there's no file. There is no file on Coral Way.
It's a national example.
It's a national example. It's actually known internationally in bilingual ed. But in spite of the fact that this museum has files on the public schools in Miami, in Florida, southern Florida, there's nothing on Coral Way. So we want to add as much as we can to the file here.
What was really, I have to say one thing that I've learned over the years, and because I was teaching for a while, academia, and at university level, what we had is we had good word clearing. Everyone learned how to use the dictionary. Clearing words, that means that we clarified definitions very thoroughly. We looked at the root of the definition of a word. The misunderstood word is probably one of the biggest obstacles to children learning, and I've learned this through my students in terms of nomenclature for my profession, that people get tangled up in words, and they forget what they read because they forget, you know, after a certain point. During that era, I remember distinctly that we were reading and we had a Spanish-English dictionary with us at all times. I think that reintegrating the use of the dictionary and really actually training kids how to use the dictionary completely will help a great deal to deal with all this whole sort of, am I bilingual, am I not? Because it gives you a complete grasp of just plain good old language. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's one of the major things. The second thing is that the student has to go at his own pace. He cannot skip a gradient. He has to slowly get good at certain things, and then he can move on to the next. What happens often is that children get pushed into the next gradient without really mastering the level that they're at. And that's a very important thing, especially in bilingual education, because a student has to be able to read both in English and Spanish very well. And the third gradient, the third issue that I think is important, is practical application. The person has to get mass on what he's doing. The music and the art, when we were in like studying social studies, we always did like a graphic depiction. We had plays that we did where we had role-playing. We had costumes for each of the countries that we were studying. And I think that making those cultures real to the students so that they have reality on, you know, what their culture is. Like if you're from Guatemala or you're from Ecuador or you're from Colombia, what is the history of your culture? So that the kid isn't embarrassed to be Hispanic, isn't, you know, it's something to be proud of. I mean, I come from a country that there are churches built in the 15th century and the 13th century, you know, 14th century. That's a long time ago. That's long before Miami happened. So it's something that you can be proud of. And I think that those are the kind of things that the students learned, what we learned, not just the language, but the culture, and to value that history. So those are the three barriers to study. The lack of mass, which is lack of physical understanding of something. Then the second one is the skipped gradient, going beyond your point of comfort. And the third and most important one is the misunderstood word, because that can kill you, and especially in a bilingual program.
Well, one of the classes that the children enjoyed a lot were music, naturally, and physical education, because you had to listen to the PE teacher trying to teach the words to the kids in both languages, mm-hmm. basketball and baseball and things like that. Oh, how are you saying it in Spanish? They enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, thank you very much. This was very valuable. Thank you.